SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Memorial Day weekend Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com, and one of our favorite Fridays and weekends of the year. Memorial Day means maybe it'll stop raining. And stop being nasty, and spring can commence. Although it seems like we go from winter to summer in about 60 seconds flat. It's like there's no spring. There's just boom. It'll be 90 degrees here in about 10 minutes. We look forward to this. This is always a great racing weekend, and there's still plenty of cards to draw for Monday. We'll worry about that later this afternoon when they come out, and we'll start to look ahead. But in the meantime, you know, we've got a nice Friday of racing, frankly, ahead of tomorrow. We're going to do plenty of weekend previewing and handicapping toward mostly Saturday. There's a little Sunday. I guess Santa Anita probably has the best Sunday action stakes-wise. And also a two-year-old group. But the Summertime Oaks that Hammer crafted, and the Monrovia, and I don't know. Why should I? I don't need to reiterate the frustration over races like the Monrovia and the Daytona being run at 5 furlongs on the grass instead of down the hill. But so be it. Memorial Day always, you know, it's always great. And it does, around here, it kicks off parade season. I've lived all over. I've now lived here for 20 years, and they'll throw a parade at the drop of a hat. It's unbelievable. We'll have the Memorial Day parade today, 6 o'clock, Memorial Day parade, and then in a couple of weeks we have Whipple City Days. You know, kind of the founder days kind of thing. We'll have the Whipple City Days parade, then the July 4th parade, then the Veterans Day parade. My favorite, the Halloween parade, where the kids march up and down the street collectively in their costumes. It's a riot. And basically, it's a manufactured way to get, two different days of candy. It's the funniest thing. But it's you know, for those of you that, you know, and it's great because a lot of times I'm never around for Halloween because of Breeders' Cup. So if they run the Halloween parade the previous Saturday, I get to see the kids in the con. It's really cute. And then the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Parade of Greenwich, New York, the lighted tractor Christmas parade when the tractors come from all over Washington County, all lit up. They've managed to create a. I'm telling you, it's like the Rose Parade. There's a flatbed where they judge them as they come by, and it's a whole big deal. We don't have a lighted Christmas tractor princess. I think the dairy princess from the county fair. I think she gets to preside over it in a parka. you can't drive her around in an open bed tractor, it is funny. I've never lived anywhere where there's so many parades. This is an important thoroughfare. This is Route 29, which connects like Saratoga to Vermont. So there's tractor trailers that make their way east-west, and you know, a whole bunch of, you see the dairy trailers, the uh, the the uh, you know the the milk wagons. And boy, you want to see some annoyed truck drivers that are stuck behind the traffic that when they close 29 for these parades. It's very funny. Anyway, hope it's a great Memorial Day for everyone, and the racing is going to certainly keep you occupied. You know, we have these 2 weeks between now and Belmont. Next week, actually, I should mention, too, the match series and the big card at Penn National, including the Penn Oaks. That'll be kind of a big part of the focus. And you know, right here on Monday in New York, we've got the State Breds. I'm looking forward to that card being drawn. And you know, even away from Monmouth and Churchill and Belmont and Santa Anita, which we'll focus on today, I saw that Mark Cassie, who the whole barn is just tearing it up, not just the stakes. Yesterday they won the opener at Belmont. They won there was a 2-year-old race, and they popped a Bodemeister filly at a nice price, Lady Fatima. But be aware tomorrow at Gulfstream, there's two filly maiden races, the third and the fifth. The third is on the dirt. The fifth is on the turf. And Cassie trying to slip the sister of Classic Empire. Nah. Classic Girl. She's not the favorite. She's actually the third choice. Classic Empire's little sister, who is by Candy Ride. There's also Wesley Ward in there with a filly named Mrs. Maisel, which those of you that enjoy the show can appreciate. And Maker's got Sunset Promise. Those are the two favorites. But Classic Girl, the six, let's be aware and watch for that debut. Classic Empire's 2-year-old sister. Hey, it's like, can't put that, can't slip those by. You might try. There's also, and on this topic, actually, I'll pause for a second before we look at some other things, and I'll give you the lineup in a moment. The 2-year-old season, something yesterday, in fact, with this Lady Fatima, and also at Churchill in that race that we had kind of discussed and were watching because of Joe Sharp, that Quiet Dawn, who got the last check, the last significant check, finished fifth, beaten about 6 lengths, give or take. Didn't run badly. Mild debut, kind of chased around, and pretty much it was a little bit of a merry-go-round. But I noticed something between these two races, between the Belmont opener and that Churchill third. And that was that, for instance, at Belmont, the Wesley Ward, Kiowa Sunset, goes off at even money. And the other Wesley Ward goes off at 2-1. So there were two Wesley Wards in here. And the automatic assumption that Ward is going to just dominate these races, Keeneland, okay, early on, it's fine. We're a little bit past that now. And this was 5 furlongs. This was still short, and there's still plenty of, there's still plenty of 4.5 types, that are being run. But in addition to Ward getting heavily bet and Cassie winning with this Lady Fatima, who actually, had some breeding. The same thing happened at Churchill, where you had a Ward returnee, Tessarina, go off at 6-5, and the second choice was Asmussen at just under 2-1. And the assumption and the way the betting goes, it offers some opportunity. And Bill Hembrecht, sent out well spent. A Hampton Court filly, a interestingly bred, you know, Hampton Court, the Australian, and this is a spendthrift filly. And the dam, Cryptic Message, she was a stake winner, a three-time stake winner. And so for this horse to go off at 8-1, I mean, just because Wesley Ward and Asmussen, and they win early, they've got plenty of precocious types and blah, blah, blah. But they're not all going to win, and they all don't deserve to be 6-5 and 3-2. So and it's funny, these were not big fields. Six horses at Belmont for a 14.40 winner, and seven horses at Churchill and an $18 winner. So, you know, really dig in and don't look at siblings. Look for successful siblings, win early siblings with, you know, less familiar connections. And obviously Cassie's not a less familiar connection. But, you know, Helmbrecht a little bit, but Helmbrecht, nothing wrong, Bill Helmbrecht wins races. And certainly a horse that had was over at the training center, at the Thoroughbred Training Center, had a best of 20 bullet, and then the second best of 23rd near bullet from the gate. So this horse telegraphed that there was going to be speed, 8-1. So there's, you know, just an aside. Just because Wesley Ward, they're all not going to win. It wins plenty, but when his presence, especially, you know, with these races, with two of them, they're going to get overbet. So there's a little aside for some ideas. The ideas for today, well, got a fun lineup, and Marty McGee is going to kick things off after the first break. We're going to do some Preakness recapping with Mart after a really nice week together in Baltimore. Really had a lot of fun. It was really a special week. So we'll get a little Magoo to kick things off. And, of course, we're going to have to celebrate his remarkable achievement from 29 years ago. The Northern Wolf that day in the inaugural DeFrancis Dash. Yeah, dude. Marty, it's not a red board, because I found the actual, you know, Marty had mentioned. He said, you know, I picked Northern Wolf when I sent him the little tidbit. He said, I picked Northern Wolf that day. And so then I went and looked and found it. And sure enough, he sure did. And then some. So we'll talk to Marty. Jason Beam is going to visit Monmouth with, of course, the, you know, first big stake Saturday at Oceanport. Fast Times at the Jersey Shore. And the Boiling Springs. As well as the Monmouth Stake and the Salvatore Mile. So we'll talk to Jason. And we've got some other news, too, beside the stakes action at Monmouth. Nick Tamaro. We'll find out how Nick's move went. He couldn't join us last week. We'll check in with Hammer, who had an interesting week. He had Hammer had a very interesting meeting this week. Ed DeRosa will join us. Scully's tied up, so no Scully today, but we'll check in with Ed, and he can take some victory laps. He was on War of Will and built a nice ticket to score, and he'll explain his philosophy. I mean, kind of ties in with what I said yesterday about the, you know, that all. In the second rung, using the all button, particularly on these big days, because you get these crazy Dallas Stewart and Dale Roman's horses. We finally are going to get a chance. We haven't talked to Quigley in too long. We're going to catch up with Quigley on this big weekend at Santa Anita. They'll draw the Gold Cup today, where Gift Box looks very, very tough. But nice racing all weekend at Santa Anita. Scott Stevens, the older brother of Gary. Looking forward to this. And, of course, you know, the Arizona Downs, the former Yavapai, opens today. The group of partners that refashioned it, put a bunch of money in. So we can actually touch on that with Scott. But he won the Wolf, the George Wolf, last week, joining his brother. They both have won it. Todd Pletcher is going to join us at the end of the show, and it's a sad note. J.J. Krupe. James J.J. Krupe. Passed away yesterday. He'd been sick, but he was at Timonium. And just too sad. A brilliant Jersey horseman. Great in the afternoons for many years before fashioning his development center. We'll talk about him, and Todd will pay tribute. Back after this with Marty McGee.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
A triple crown for the ages wraps up with the Belmont Stakes on Saturday, June 8th. And no matter who you're betting in the Belmont, your best bet is with ExpressBet. ExpressBet's world-famous Belmont Stakes wager guide is available Friday, May 31st. It features analysis, insights, and picks from handicappers like Millie Ball, Steve Bick, and Jeff Siegel. Plus, cash in on ExpressBet's promotions, including a money-back guarantee on the Belmont Stakes and a 10% exacta bonus on Gold Cup Friday. And if you don't have an ExpressBet account yet, now is the perfect time to get started. New customers who sign up before the Belmont get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Your best bet is with ExpressBet. Visit ExpressBet.com to learn more. And remember to join ExpressBet on Saturday, June 8th to watch and bet the Belmont Stakes. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, coming up on 20 minutes into this weekend preview, and we'll dive right in, and we're going to talk about the good action at Churchill in a second. Marty McGee's going to join us, and we got some old business before we talk new business. Mart?
Bike.
I knew that was coming.
Bike.
Hey, Mike, I didn't know J.J. Kruppi died. That's terrible. I didn't. Yeah. Had he been ill?
Yeah, his health had been slipping, and yeah.
You know, my first gig with the Form after I left the Sun in 92, my first gig was at Monmouth Park in May of 92.
Wow.
And James Kruppi and John Forbes and Joe Orsino and Benny Perkins, they were the big dogs on the backside. And that's when I would be there pretty much every morning. And Kruppi was the guy everybody liked. He was the guy that the hail fellow well met, and everybody could kid with him and back and forth. And the last time I saw him, I think I had to go to Ocala about 5 or 6 years ago to do a profile on one of the farms. And I went into this little strip mall pizza joint because I was early. And and he was at a table with about 7 or 8 other people, and he recognized me. And he had a great reputation in the business.
Well, and prepared so many tremendous horses. And, Todd, I reached for Todd automatically just because of the most recent ties. But there is, I could have gone in 27 directions. The Monmouth, I thought of Joe O and Dennis Drazen and everybody there, Bobby Colina and so forth. And John Parada, John says, he said he literally knew him from the first day he came through the gates at Monmouth. Literally from the day he came on the racetrack. And, he really crafted a fascinating career, shifting his focus to the young horses and, the sales arena and development and became a legend in that right. So.
Yeah.
A lot of people saddened overnight as the news spread.
Yeah.
And had a, it had a, we'll also talk about his training. I mean, his training ended about 20 years ago, and, not sure. I'll have to look up how many races he won, but he won a bunch of training titles at Monmouth and probably Jersey as well. Won 958 races in 6,500 starts.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew he was in the leading trainer. I forget who won that summer of 92, but he was in the thick of it.
Always hard. Well, speaking back to days gone by, that was one of the funniest things that sort of organically came to light this week. I couldn't let go of the Covfefe record, and not only was I interested in the performance and everything that that went with it, but then I said to myself the other day, I said, well, Northern Wolf, and then we knew Hank Allen, that's a great story, and Ron and Dick Allen and Hank, the 11th leading set of brothers in baseball history statistically, and then I said, well, when did Northern Wolf set this record, 29 years ago? And it turns out it was in the inaugural running of the DeFrancis. And so when I sent you the little thing I put on Twitter, Marty said, I put him on top that day, picked right on top. So I went and proved it to everybody. Anybody that, it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to prove it. And not only did you pick Northern Wolf at 8-1 morning line, but again, safely kept, but you predicted a track record.
Well, that was my line. Back then I made my own line, and I want to think it was better than the track line because they had a bunch of different guys go through there. But I'm the only reason I would go back to Maryland for the Preakness, and a guy would say, bears his teeth today. And because he remembered me picking Northern Wolf on top, and you go back, and of course it's like the telephone game, the operator, where the words kind of get messed up. When you put that up on Twitter, I said, "We'll bear his teeth," not "bears his teeth today," but or I thought he used to say "bears his fangs today" is what the guy used to say to me. And he had the open air outside box and the luzz up, remember the Lutz was my right fielder on our softball team there at Pimlico. That was a fun day. I mean, Hank Allen was such a magnanimous guy. He still is. I've got a good friend I've told you about, Larry Horning, a retired trainer. He says he runs into Hank every once in a while. And what a gentleman and a scholar he is.
Well, it set off all kinds of fun, tangents, and people grabbed on to whatever memory they particularly were tied to, and including one guy who said, Hank Allen trained my favorite horse of all time, Sparrow One. And it just out of curiosity, I had come across a picture of Sparrow One, and I sent it to Dick Allen. And
Sparrow Vaughn.
Sparrow Vaughn, yeah. And yeah. Other people talked about, whatever. I mean, Frank DeFrancis and you. They loved how much they missed Marty in the Baltimore Sun from those days, and it was great. It really, really fun to, and newspapers. I get all those clippings from newspapers.com. And
that's awesome. You know, I used to save those things, but I purged my house like I told you last December, and I'm sure that's one of the things that went out to the street. But we used to devote a lot of column inches to horse racing, and I watched that. I don't want to get into this really, but I watched the HBO thing, and I'm still upset about it. You know, the horses are wonderful, and we all enjoy watching them race, and that's, I don't want to get into it, but yeah, it's fun.
Now, and on that topic quickly, an excellent, excellent written response. I people that haven't seen Alex Waldrop wrote a very pointed and specific and well-targeted response to the HBO thing. I have not paid. I mentioned it the other day and in passing. And I mean, frankly, all it is a regurgitation of their spew from 11 years ago. They have nothing new to add, and they had no interest in actually airing from anyone who could, basically tell a positive story. And there's plenty of positives to tell, but that's not what they want, and that's not what any of these sensationalistic attacks on the game are interested in. They see an opportunity for their clickbait and their other crap, and they're just sensationalizing everything. The Department of Labor got into the act with this, just over the top press release about the dealings with Chad Brown. I mean, just completely a complete distortion of reality. But
right.
That's all that matters these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I got to get some Preakness response from you too, because really, 2 weeks later, Mart, we come out of this fascinating disqualification, and we get the horse that wins the Preakness that could best keep the story going.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's happy for Mark, Cassie, and David Carroll, and all the rest. Have you had Dale on the show yet? Because how was that horse 29-1 and not 92-1? I mean, that horse was a last minute entry, a pure afterthought, and then he runs giant to come up the rail and bust everybody's tickets up. Unless you had the all ball, you weren't catching that gimmick. And, of course, I had the 1-5 for enough to, probably break me even for the race. And here's Dale with this horse that, I don't know if he wanted to run it or not. I don't know if it was a Brad Kelly idea. I quoted Dale as saying, this is a wide open race, you might as well, if you're going to take a shot, like right now. So he did, and he was second. And I want to know who was betting on that horse to win at 29-1, because the horse had been 128-1 in the Holy Bowl. So how in the Preakness, in a field of 13, is he 29-1? I just, sometimes this game is just mind-boggling.
Well, how were several horses? I'm just reaching for the chart. How were a bunch of horses that were taking money in there? The betting, at least the win betting, was a gigantic mystery. You know, you're looking at what? How about well, Signal Man was 21-1. Bodie Express 20-1. Mark King 32-1.
Stop on Bodie Express. I happened to watch the race right next to Gustavo Delgado.
Oh boy.
The trainer. He was about four stairs up on the walkway up to the jocks room right there at the winner's circle.
Sure.
And I kept looking. I actually took a picture, and the picture didn't stick on my phone. I don't know what I did, but anyway, I had a picture of it, and he never changed expression. He was just looking with his arms folded the whole time. And then, of course, all the idiots when the horse comes back and the outrider can't catch the horse momentarily. You know, the yahoos are going, "Wee!" You know, and, you know, spread it on and just, you know, you never know what's going to go on in this game, Big.
No. and the public fascination. I mean, to the extent
God.
Well, how about Johnny? How about CNN wanting Johnny on the air?
Yeah.
That was unbelievable.
I walk into FABD, the barbecue joint here in town on Tuesday, and that's what these guys wanted to talk about was the loose horse. And I'm like, you know that happens a lot, right? Well, the horse is really running, and it was coming up. Well, you know he was carrying zero weight, and the other horses were carrying 126, right? You know, it's like, gee. Anyway, yeah, we were talking about the odds, Bodie Express, and then who was the other horse who was shorter than he should have been?
Well, Signal Man, I mean, for me, Market King was 32-1.
Market King. How can he not be 100-1?
Yeah, you know, okay, Laughing Fox, 21-1, that's the price you want if you're using him. The thing is, Bart, based on the exotic payouts, $473 exacta, a $4,700 try for a buck, and a $52,000 super for a buck, the exotic odds on those horses were more in line. But
absolutely, yeah.
This is a weird phenomenon that, you know, this all, you know, this is Giacomo and Mind That Bird. It had mitigated somewhat of late, but I think people, you know, people got confused about this race and were just reaching in any direction. But and I can't believe the computer money, you know, that comes in. I can't believe that they were driving those long shots down.
No. Yeah, I can't explain it.
Very interesting. I got to get Maury Wolf is the guy for this. I will get Maury next week, and he'll explain what transpired. Unless he,
yeah, I want to know about it. I want to know about Market King, and I want to know about Everfast. Why they were so low? I want you to ask him about that.
Well, Dale has now done this a number of times in Preaknesses and Belmonts and
Travis.
He was actually. Yep, Travers win.
Dallas Stewart's even better than Dale at in the belly.
I don't know. They're pretty close now. They're pretty close. Dale's done this three times in the Preakness, and he's got a win. Not that Shackelford was a stunner, but yeah. You know. Well, it sets up for an interesting Belmont. Looks like we got 10 right now. We'll see if anybody else wants to throw down, and you know, the rest of the 3 days is going to be tremendous with lots of great racing, including the Metropolitan Handicap that everybody's excited about. Meanwhile, anything else from Preakness before we look at this Churchill card tomorrow?
No, the Covfefe thing was unreal, though. The 107 and 70. You know, and it's like I wrote a little something about it. Brad said, like, the look in their eyes. Like, people were like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Yep.
Because I happened to go watching it live, you know, at about the, I guess where I sit there is about the 70-yard pole or something, right there on the upper level. She was flying. I mean, she was absolutely, it was like she was a stone-cold closer shot out of the cannon, you know, coming down the stretch. So, and they've had a bunch of different sources verify the time. Steve, they run six, that's by far the most run race at Pimlico, and they've been running there a million years, and she shattered the track record. So it was pretty awesome.
It was nuts. And, I, you know, I had Luzzy on to talk about that day, and Luz explained one of the reasons that the number has been tough to lower because there's no
run-up.
Yeah.
It's a run-up. Yeah. It's all about the run-up. Because at Churchill, when they go, they'll go the first quarter in, 20-1 at Churchill because they're flying past the pole. They've got almost a 6 furlongs at Churchill is 6.25 furlongs. At Pimlico, it's 6 furlongs and about 10 feet.
No, and that's what they explained as to why the 109, which is that's a big number. I mean I've got my American Racing manuals here. I'd be curious to see if that wasn't at a prominent track the highest 6 furlong record time.
Probably was.
Right. You'd have to think. It's really quite something because 108 and 4. That's not such a foreign number. That's why this was stunning. And I put up this morning for those that are Twitter followers. I put up the sheets. Jerry Brown published the weekend numbers at Thorograph on Thursday, and Covfefe got a -3.5, which is a high number, obviously for. Or low number, as it were, for a 3-year-old filly. I mean, the Rachel Alexandra -4 in the Oaks, the one that I immediately thought of. Some people have thought of a couple of others, Dreaming of Julia and somebody talked about the Delaware. I'm going to forget who it was, the Delaware Oaks last year. But anyway, another confirmation, Marty, is pictured in the figure that Mark Reed's filly got. She got a 4, which basically is a pair up of her race at the end of last year, of her 2-year-old year. So it's not like people are going to, I know on the buyer scale, she ran a new buyer top, but on Thorograph, she paired up a race 2 back. So it's not as if, you say, well, these two ran, crazy times no, actually, she ran, what ostensibly is a paired up figure. Please flatter me. So it's just whether it's an aberration and she ever runs that way again or not, it was something people are going to remember a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. She went back to the track on Wednesday, by the way.
Good.
Brad says she's great and he's going to try and run her once before the test.
Victory ride.
He's got the Klein filly for the test, too. The Klein filly is going to run the Jersey Girl, and Brad's looking at the Victory Ride as a bridge to the test. So that's going to be interesting. I hope they both stay sound and they both go in that.
Wow.
Both stay unbeaten, really. Well, Covfefe's not unbeaten, but yeah. I mean, she's going to be one to whatever every time she runs from now on after that. Right?
For a little bit. Well, and the biggest threat she might have right now is her stablemate. Let's look at the weekend so far. The Saturday and Sunday cards at Churchill are excellent, Marty. The allowance action on Sunday, I mean, we're not going to probably get to it, but no stake, but there's a very good, I thought, card for Sunday as well for those that want to focus in at the Downs for the weekend. You got the Kirtana tomorrow, a six-pack where Brad Cox looks, he's 4-5 on the line, but he looks 2-5, really, with gaining. And then there's the Winning Colors and a really good third-level allowance as the eighth.
Yeah, like you said, on Sunday we've got 3 allowances. All 3 of them are oversubscribed, meaning you've got AEs and all of them, so we should have big fields for all of those. I was going to say 2-5 on gaining for the Kirtana. Winning Colors is a good race. We've got a field of 12, only a few outsiders. Otherwise, everybody has a shot. I thought that maybe Rusty Arnold, who's having a great last 6 weeks, I wrote about him in the, I guess it'd be in the Saturday editions of the Forum, but he's got Awestruck and the comebacking Anathela, who's a Churchill lover. She's 1-3 and had 4 seconds out of 10 starts over the local track. Classy Act is a very interesting comebacker for Brett Calhoun, having been regrouped. We know what she could do last year as a 3-year-old. So a Stroll in the Park I thought was terrific here last summer in winning the Roxalana. She's kind of gone downhill since then, but she has been regrouped too by Larry Jones. So a very interesting 16th renewal running. There's a difference between a renewal and a running. 16th running of the Winning Colors here tomorrow at Churchill Downs.
Well, and you went with Awestruck, and I thought that I thought A Stroll in the Park, the Larry Jones, was okay. 5-1 on that one. What did you do in the in that third level allowance where you've got so many, you know, stake Philly types? You know, these are 3-year-olds. A lot of them were good at two and are trying to, you know, maybe recapture some of that mojo. May Never Know, Catherine the Great, Into Trouble in here. Istanbul Council may be the Philly to, you know, to worry about. There's also that Peruvian Appeal for Cox on the outside. Very good group of nine in the eighth.
Yeah, I thought that was a tough one. I would probably fade May Never Know and go with Into Trouble there for Colebrook. I mean, she had a little bit tough go at Keeneland, and but yeah, like you said, this is a pretty good group of 3-year-old fillies. Istanbul Council, her maiden win last October at Keeneland was really eye catching, and she ran a pretty good race in an upset down at Oaklawn Park this year. But yeah, it's a good group, and yeah, I'll side here with Colebrook.
A couple of other potential plays in the ninth. This is a mile on the turf, the fillies and mares, first level allowance. I'll take all the 8-1 on Fiber Optic that I can get.
Yeah, Major Remember is an interesting horse. First time Lasik, first start here for Grand Motion. You know, Steve, the purses here are really, they've really gotten good. We suffered for a number of years in terms of, you know, comparisons to, well, even Arlington back 15 years ago, but, of course, to California and New York. Now we've caught up with these. Every maiden race is a big purse. The allowances start at $87,000. By the way, Ellis Park just came out yesterday with their condition book and stake schedule. They're going to be off the charts, so I imagine a lot of these guys will keep a lot of horses here, and the racing will be even better there this summer. So, things are really looking up with the, it's, you got to attribute it to the historical racing that they kind of keyholed through and made an end run around the law. All of them did. And, but yeah, it's really paid off in terms of the purses. And then as a result of that, the big circle is the racing's good too.
Well, one more little spot before we wrap, and maybe two. The maiden group, Mart, that's going to go a mile and an eighth on a turf, the boys, 3 and up. First time North America for Connor Murphy, who, you know, Connor Murphy's a guy that needs some needs a baby spotlight on him. He does a good job, and World Tax War kind of caught my interest at 5-1, and Murphy actually has got a 12-1 shot in there as well. He's got the 8 and the 9 that line up shoulder to shoulder. Obviously, Trinity is the horse to beat for Grand Motion, and Kid Lemuel for Eddie Keneally probably is your controlling speed.
Yeah, I picked Trinity in there. Have you had Connor Murphy on the show before?
Yes, with who was the good horse that nice horse of his that the last 3 years that kept getting, you know, became a 5, 6, 7-year-old.
I want to say Great Wide Open was
it. Great Wide Open, and he had another one. He had two, actually.
Yeah. But, you know, Connor, he hit the lottery or something. It's a crazy story how he got started in the business. I think they hit some, like, 9-race parlay to win $1 million or something, and that was his start. I'm sure he's told it on your show, but he might be worth having on again if he can. You know, these guys say, write a story about me. I said, well, do something. You know, you do something, that gives me a reason to write a story about you. So maybe he'll do something and you can have him on.
Yeah, it was Dimension. It was Dimension, the one that won a bunch of stakes, and particularly up at was tough up in Woodbine. Well, you know who else, of course, you know who else is a big lottery winner, how he got into the game, is Harold Lerner.
Did not know that.
Harold Lerner won the biggest jackpot in New York. He and his wife won at one time. I think it was like the biggest for a long time, like a $300 million New York lotto or something. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely did.
Well, if I ever hit the lottery, Paul McGee's going to have more horses, I'll tell you that. But yeah, I'm getting into it too.
What a surprise. There you go. What would you do? That's my favorite story from Harry Alleo about Lost in the Fog, when they said, you've had a lot of offers for Lost in the Fog. Why would you not sell him? So, well, what do you think I would do with the money? I'd go out looking for another lost in the fog. I've already got him.
That always makes me smile.
Yeah, I'd go to the track. That's what I'd do.
Exactly. I'd be playing every day. You'd get up there, put you on Millionaire's Row.
All right, Jason Beam's next. See you, buddy.
He is. How do you know that? How do you know the lineup?
He already texted me and said, look, you're at 920, I'm at 940. The ratings are going to go through the roof. So, yeah.
He's waiting in the wings. Marty, happy Memorial Day.
Same to you, buddy.
We'll talk soon. The one and only Marty McGee. We're going to stay right here because Jason Beam is indeed. And virtually all of racing Twitter stops what they're doing to hear from Jason Beam. They hang on his every word. Jace, good morning.
Steve, how are you? It's good to be back on the show.
It's good to have you back. And first and foremost, you've had several weeks now. We talked to you last time from Churchill as you were making your way east in basically travels with Charlie, too. You made your way to Monmouth. How do you like Oceanport?
It's pretty great. It's different than I was expecting. I was under this impression that most of New Jersey was like Newark. In that area, and it's very much not. It feels like it's its own little separate world down here, and the people are great. The track, as you know, is incredible, and it's just a beautiful place to get to go every day.
Oh, no doubt, and New Jersey is about as diverse as maybe any state in the country, from the heavy industrial to they call it the Garden State for a reason. You get mm-hmm. to, you name it. I mean, you go out to the gorges, and then the shore is unbelievable. My first racetrack, Jason, that I got to go on a regular basis. My grandfather would take me, to Belmont and Aqueduct, but that was only on occasion. When I lived in Brielle, that was when I was able to, go on a near daily basis, and it was to Monmouth, and it is that building is one of the great, small clubhouse grandstands in the game. Those parterre boxes, that was the first luxury box virtually anywhere in sport. It's just a magical place.
And one of the neat features, at least for me, is the announcer's booth, like an open window room.
Yes.
You kind of slide open this huge window, and you get to experience the sea breeze, but also the crowd. And it took me a while on the first day to get used to that because I've always kind of been in enclosed rooms or tracks where there was no crowd. And so when you get that buildup at the top of the stretch from the fans, like the first day I kept feeling like I was trying to kind of yell over it, and then I'm like, oh, I have a microphone. I don't need to do that.
Well, it's a natural for you because you can hold court. It's basically like that scene in the King's Speech when King George is overlooking, and you should perfect your royal wave to the crowd because they can yell up to you.
I hide in the back on the couch, I'll be honest, 95% of the time.
it's great, and it's appropriate, a great place for you to spend this first part of the summer. And of course, Frank will be making his way east at some point, right? What's the date for the next?
I know my last day is the 23rd, which is also Santa Anita's closing day of June. So he'll be back for the 27th or 28th. So United Nations weekend is my last weekend.
And that's going to be your first grade one to call, right?
Yeah, Saturday will be my first grade at anything to call.
Oh, how about that? I hadn't really thought of that.
The Portland Mile and the Oz West Maturity didn't quite get graded. the Cradle Stakes was graded a couple of years before I got to River Downs, and it actually got ungraded the year Bellamy Road won.
That's crazy.
Of all things.
The Budweiser Cradle.
When I was there, it was the Miller Lite Cradle. I think it was the whoever was the River Downs beer vendor Cradle.
That's interesting. I always got a kick out of which race is it? Is it the there was one of the juvenile races the juvenile races being sponsored by liquor companies. I thought, this isn't right. This is encouraging underage drinking.
Responsibly.
Too funny. Responsibly, exactly. Well, so far it's been fun. I mean, this is the first big Saturday, obviously, of the Mama season. There's been a couple of stakes already, including the Long Branch, but you get to this juncture and the Monmouth Stakes and the Salvatore Mile, which is, of course, a historic race, and the Boiling Springs, which at one time was a fairly, important distaff graded event, and it has kind of lost its edge. Was the start of the run up to the Molly Pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's this year. I mean, the field is. I mean, I think it's a really good betting race. It's an interesting race. I kind of like a horse that's a long shot, the number two Trailblazer. Since I've been here, I've kind of noticed that these, the races that start up in that infield shoot, the mile and a 16th and the mile and an eighth races, they're kind of add a little bit of a turn, and so you turn into the stretch, and then so they're like 2.5 turns for a mile and a 16th race, and it just seems really hard for horses to overcome wide trips or to really come from off the pace. We've seen a lot of wire winners. And so Trailblazer was breaking from on the far outside. It says the 7 post, but I think it was 10 in the program, and just was kind of unable to get in a good spot early and finally started making some noise down the stretch. I think this horse is actually pretty talented, so hopefully can work out a little bit better trip from down on the inside.
Well, it gives way. It starts at, it starts as the 7th, the Boiling Springs, and then we've got a couple of miscellany spots in between the graded stakes. There's a claimer going short as the 8th. The 9th, 10th, 11th is a nice pick 3 sequence, and the 9th does start the pick 5, which goes to the end of the card. But the Salvatore Mile, the grade 3, these are 3 and ups, and some very familiar and very Jersey-centric participants, including Pat McBurney with Just Call Kenny, and of course there's Sunny Ridge, Dennis Drazen's homebred that has been such a success. Diamond King shows up in here. Nice group.
Yeah, I'm excited about this race. It's for some reason it's a race I always end up enjoying each year. I love Dirt Miles. Maybe that's from being from Emerald, and that's kind of our feature thing. I think Diamond King is a really, really talented horse. I think he's kind of been wanting a little bit of the shorter distances, and so I think that getting back to the mile and third start off the layoff, and I think drawing inside, and there's some, that the 5 horse is going to be a big, huge long shot, but looks like the kind of horse that's going to try to go out and open up 5 on everybody, and I don't know that he'll be able to do that, but I just think Diamond King might kind of get the run of the race in this spot, and the other speed horses kind of being the 2 to the far outside, so it'll be interesting run to the first turn because it's not all that far on these mile races to that first turn.
You mentioned the horses on the outside. That includes Bal Harbor for Todd Pletcher. Todd will join us later this morning to pay tribute to J.J. Krupe. Speaking of New Jersey and Monmouth, multiple training title winner at Monmouth before he started the Newcastle farm operation. But Bal Harbor in here, stretching out, last seen at the beginning of the year in the Toboggan. And California Knight as well with plenty of lick. So it feels to me like a lot of this sets up for Sunny Ridge, with a ground-saving trip under Jose Lascano coming out of a good effort in the Westchester, actually, just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I think this race was the last time we saw him here in New Jersey.
Turning to the Grade 2, and the Monmouth is such an interesting race because it was originally put on for Big Brown, as strictly a prep for him to start getting ready for the turf opportunity, and it ended up growing into something very important. It's a Grade 2, and when you look at who's won it after Big Brown, Precious Passion won the next year for the Generazios, and Mary Hartman, Get Serious for John Forbes, Nice Teaks North, I think people probably forget about him. Shug won it 2 years in a row with Datalink and Boisterous. So on and so forth. The last 2 years, Money Multiplier for Chad Brown. And Chad's got a big shot here. Almanar figures prominently.
Yeah, this was, I was telling a friend of mine, I said, Cutler in my program for this race was kind of intense because it's like Judmont and Shadwell and Castleton Lions and Tomasio and Pin Oak and Judmont again, and so it was like, oh my God, we're not in Kansas anymore. You know, for as far as who's running in this spot. But I think it's, you know, to me, as I said, these turf races have been so good to be up front. And Markadoff, I know, is a very, very talented front runner, I think, you know, for this level, I think. And so whether or not up the ante goes, I think, is a big question mark. But I was not impressed with Projected's effort in the cliffhanger, just because I thought he got a lot better trip than Hawkish did today. Hawkish looked totally beat on the turn. And then kind of got a perfect split. But I thought Projected kind of had the run of the race and wasn't able to fully capitalize on it. So I'm a little bit against that one. Synchrony, I know, is really, really good at Monmouth. I've always thought his style is a little bit more suited to those longer stretch tracks like Fairground and Keeneland and stuff like that. But he loves it here. But he was also 3-5 in both those last two wins. And so I don't think he's going to be that this time, so he might have just been laying over the competition there. So I'm a little against the outside horses in here, and a little bit more into the ones down toward the inside.
How, you know, and you've referenced a couple of interesting elements in this conversation about getting a feel for the racetrack, and how long did that take in terms of, you know, understanding where horses were going to come from and the like?
I think we're still in the middle of that process.
Okay.
It's a little, I mean, I kind of purposely, this probably sounds a little strange from announcer standards, but I purposely don't over-handicap the races because I think sometimes when you do that, you end up getting surprised, and it kind of throws you off if you're going into a race predicting a little bit too much of what you think will happen. So I always look over the cards, but, you know, pretty casually, and mostly just looking for things that I think are interesting that might come up in the call. So, but just as far as how the races shape up and stuff like that, I mean, speed is obviously dangerous at all, pretty much, you know, most levels of thoroughbred racing. And it seems so far, I don't know that it's on the turf that it's so much speed as it is inside positioning. That's kind of my theory. I ran that by Brad Thomas on the Sunday show, and he kind of tended to agree with that. I mean, even the 5.5 furlong turf races, you know, they kind of start on that little chute, and so they're almost a two-turn 5.5 furlong race. And so, you know, it's a little tough. I say that it's tough to come from the outside, and, of course, the stake last week ran 10-11, so maybe I should keep my mouth shut.
Well, the Monmouth Stakes, the Grade 2, mile and an eighth, and if we are looking for Jersey tie-ins, well, Mrs. De Tomaso has got Irish Straight in here, and you know, certainly Irish Work Rise's older brother, eligible, and loves the course, and the daughter of Amory Haskell. And so you can't get any more Monmouth than Mrs. De Tomaso and her sister Hope Jones.
Yeah, good. That's kind of been one of the neat things for being over here, is getting to discover a lot of the local lineages, because I'm so proud of all of the local folks and in Seattle and Portland where I'm from. And so it's neat to see that that really exists over here as well.
Well, you know, you and I actually, even before getting you on here today, for, you know, and it occurred to me when I was thinking about the schedule, and maybe we've buried the lead, I don't know, but I thought we'd talk about the first order of business, which is what you're doing currently, before we talk about what is ahead. And I'll let you tell everybody what you're going to be doing this fall.
Going to be going to a Colonial Downs in August. I'm very excited. It was great because the Monmouth thing and the Colonial thing kind of came together at the same time. And, you know, living back on the West Coast, you know, being out east for a long period of time was, you know, or coming back here for, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, it was like, okay, that'll be great. And then I talked with Jill Byrne about the Colonial thing, and she told me some of the stuff they're doing. You know, I mean, they're going to run for $500,000 a day, and the Grade 3 Virginia Derby's coming back, and, you know, they're putting a lot of money into the facility. They've redone the dirt surface and all this stuff. And so I was like, well, that sounds kind of interesting. And I was like, well, I'm already going to be back there. And so it worked out great from a timing standpoint, but really just it seems that the team there, they're just really pumped up to not only – bring Colonial back, but to make it a big success. So to get to be part of that is something I'm really excited about. It's I know it's not a, you know, a grand opening, but it does feel like a rebirth for them, and it's going to be cool to kind of be in on the ground floor with them for that.
Oh, no doubt. And it's a, you know, it's a facility that has been so underutilized, and
the rebirth and the refashioning brought really about by incredible hard work, first and foremost by the Virginia Equine Alliance, Deb Easter, and all the horsemen in Virginia, in the Commonwealth, and there's a great future in store. And, you know, it's got to be exciting to get in on the ground floor, too. I mean, dates are going to expand, Jason. I mean, this is, you know, this will be a, you know, a really good spot and, you know, to be associated with it, I think is a natural. You're going to, you got a place, I think, that you'll be pleased to call home.
Yeah, for me, you know, the idea of race calling again, I didn't do it for a number of years, and the idea of doing it on a more part-time basis is very appealing to me, because I mean, I already have a full-time deal, you know, working with doing the show for Bet America, and so it's, you know, in the future, I love the idea of going somewhere for 2 or 3 months and you know, and having that, but then also being able to go back home.
Well, it's one of the fascinating parts of any, you know, race season, and you know, the race calling Lazy Susan. From spot to spot. I kidded you yesterday. I said, "Are we going to talk Monmouth the Monmouth Stakes, or just your attempt to set a personal and career high of race meets to call in one calendar year?"
Yeah, I mean, you know, I couldn't get a phone call answered for a few years, so it's funny how things come and go in that respect. But I truly believe that, you know, even though the road has not been as straight as I would have liked it, I think that the end destination was kind of worth a lot of the tough parts.
Well put, and certainly you've worked hard at it, and it's really exciting. Congratulations, and continued success at the Jersey Shore, and the summer. What's going to go on in between after you finish it at Jersey and get started in Virginia?
Well, I got about a month, and so my plan is I'm going to go up to Suffolk for the closing.
Oh, nice.
One of my great friends, Jessica Paquette, works there, and so I'm going to go up and see her and go there for closing weekend. And then my temporary plan is to, like, just get an Airbnb for the month of July somewhere kind of centrally in the Northeast and, you know, kick out to Woodbine for a weekend, maybe go to Finger Lakes, hopefully get to Saratoga in the early part of the season. And as weird as it sounds, I'm thinking Buffalo might be the most centrally located for all that. And so, like, it's pretty reasonably priced from what I've seen on Airbnb. So that's my temporary plan. I might just stay around here as well, though. So we'll see what happens.
Well,
certainly not driving all the way back to Seattle for 4 days.
No, not for yeah. By the time you got there, you'd have to turn right back around. So
exactly right. Yeah.
Well, BME Awards, for those of you that somehow aren't following Jason on Twitter, and enjoy his calls at Monmouth for another month, and then you can look forward to him to preside over Colonial Downs and the restart. Are you going to go help Jonathan Thomas's dad? Are you going to go help him burn the? I think they already burned the grass course. So.
They already burnt the grass. I'm going to head down there, I think, a week or 10 days beforehand, though, and doing a lot of video stuff and social media stuff to kind of help with the launch. And and the other thing is, one of the great things about getting to travel like this is I've gotten to see so much history and so many things that I haven't seen. And so for someone who enjoys that kind of stuff, Richmond is going to be a very, very, very neat thing to see.
Well, and you got to get down on, you know, down to the Hampton, down to Norfolk. And
yep.
There's so much, there's a lot. You have no idea, and frankly, you really should go out west as well, down the Blue Ridge, and mm-hmm. there's so much to do. It's crazy.
Well, I think I'm gonna go to Elmont today. That's the tourist destination this afternoon.
That's an outstanding choice. Jason Beam, everybody, and from Calder to to Monmouth and Colonial.
I owe Calder big time. Big time. Shout out Pete Aiello.
I love it. Well, that was, yeah, that got you. That kind of, yeah, that's true, right? Put the Spurs.
I'm telling you, man, the minute I finished,
No one ever doubted the ability to follow the action and give it nice color. Jason Beam at Monmouth and soon at Colonial Downs. That's who you will hear when they open up. And you could do some social media. Where's Rosie? You can try to find out who Rosie actually is.
Now we got a lot of fun stuff planned for the social stuff down there. I'm excited.
No doubt. Jason Beam, thanks so much.
Always, Steve. Thank you.
Talk soon. Let's take a break. Top of the hour is here. Nick Tamaro standing by. We'll get Nick in here and Hammer and Ed DeRosa over the next hour. Hour three, Scott Stevens going to join us. And, of course, Scott off the Wolf Award presentation last Sunday wanted to get a chance to congratulate him and talk about his career. He's approaching 5,000 wins, which I think will make him the 37th, 38th rider in history to reach 5,000. 56, I think? 56. 56 or 57. Tom Quigley back on the show as well. Haven't talked to TQ in too long. Todd Pletcher will close it out this morning to pay tribute to JJ Groupie. Back after this, Nick Tamaro, Hour 2.